Now, your host, Michael Cohen, with a Capital City Recap on more compelling talk radio, 1320 WILS.
And we are back. I'm Michael Cohen. Thank you for joining us. Well, the five-year-long University of Michigan project studying gelada monkeys at the Simien Mountains National Park in Ethiopia, finding some surprising results that are now being released. Noah Snyder-Mackler, a doctoral graduate of psychology at the University of Pennsylvania, was the study's lead author. He joins us now to tell us much more about it. Noah, thanks for joining us on WILS this evening.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, you know, you're a psychology student. How do you end up going to Ethiopia to study monkeys?
It's an interesting question that I get a lot from a lot of people asking why I'm in psychology. Well, the field of animal behavior in general sort of spans three different departments when you think about it in universities, and those three departments would be psychology, biology, and if you're studying primates, anthropology. And that's because, you know, you're understanding a biological system, studying an organism. In psychology, you're understanding the social behaviors and, in some cases, the cognitive abilities of these animals. And then anthropology, understanding the evolution of man in general.
Now, before we get to what you actually discovered about the nature of how these monkeys interact, tell me, what is a typical day of studying monkey behavior? Do you just kind of hang back and watch them do their thing?
Yeah, fortunately, the directors of the University of Michigan Gelada Research Project, Drs. Tori Bergman and Jacinta Beener, spent a lot of time in the beginning years of the project, doing what's called habituating the animals. So you just spend a lot of time, around the animals so they get used to your presence and they continue to behave and interact, and normally while you're, observing them. And that can take, you know, months to years.
Aren't they tempted to start interacting with you, though?
No, they do not interact with the researchers, fortunately. So essentially, we just become a fly on the wall to these monkeys, which is fantastic, which is what we want to be when we're out there.
Now, gelada monkeys, all the way in Ethiopia, why was this group of monkeys chosen?
So gelada monkeys are endemic to Ethiopia. In fact, they're endemic to the highlands of Ethiopia. The research site is 11,000 feet above sea level on these huge plateaus with steep escarpments, kilometer-long escarpments around the side. And they are only found in Ethiopia, and they form some of the largest groups of any non-human primate. We regularly see them in groups of hundreds and occasionally even over 1,000 individuals. And this is because they're sort of like the cows of the primate order in that they're the only grazing primate. So over 90% of their diet is composed of grass.
So when you see hundreds of monkeys, are they all one single unit, or are there subsets within them, inner groups?
Right. So they form what's called a multi-level society or modular society, which essentially means that there's this large aggregation of monkeys foraging and ranging around on the plateau, but it's composed of subsets of predictably associated units. So the units are typically anywhere from sort of 5 to 25 individuals, one dominant male and his group of adult females, and in about a third of the units, we saw that there are sometimes multiple males, which led us to this project.
I want to get into the results of that, but tell me, how do you not get lost in all these hundreds of monkeys? How do you keep track of which monkey is which?
Lots of practice. So I spent 12 months in the field when I did this project, when I was part of this project, and it takes a fair amount of time to ID the monkeys. So we do completely non-invasive research, which means for the genetic and hormonal analysis, we collect fecal samples. And in terms of identifying the animals, we don't use tags or any like sort of spray paint or anything to identify the individuals. We just go with their natural markings. And they all, the first time you get out there, they all look exactly the same. Mm-hmm. But over time, you start to see these little nicks and scars or differences in their gait across the individuals. And we don't study all 1,000 or 2,000 individuals in our population. We study a subset of about 500 individuals.
I'm talking to Noah Snyder-Mackler. He's a graduate, a doctoral graduate of psychology at the University of Pennsylvania, the lead author of the study of these gelada monkeys at the Simien Mountains National Park in Ethiopia. So apparently the study found that there's a lot more cooperation among the monkeys, especially when you're looking at males that are unrated. They obviously compete for procreation opportunities. But what kind of behaviors did you find that may be surprising to some?
Well, I mean, it's we think of it more as a proto-cooperation in terms of this mutual tolerance among competitors. So in geladas, the majority of the units have just one dominant male, but in the subset, about a third of these units, there are multiple males, and there's one dominant male and clearly a few subordinate males, which we call the follower males. And the big question in sort of the evolution of cooperation, or one of the initial questions, is the evolution of this male-male tolerance within groups. So one of the hypotheses would be that these males are related, and they're kin, so they're brothers, and they're helping out each other, and helping out their genes to the next, helping their genes get to the next generation by helping out their brothers. But that wasn't the case in geladas. They were unrelated males in these units, the dominant males and the subordinates. So the question became, if they're in direct competition for one another and they're possibly stealing reproduction from one another, why are they tolerating the presence of one another in the mm-hmm. group? Yeah. And what we found was that these dominant males who had subordinate males actually had a much longer tenure in their unit, significantly longer tenure, than dominant males who did not have a subordinate in their unit. So dominant males of singular units. And this led to an increase on average of three additional offspring over their lifetime compared to males in singular units.
They were sharing some of the defensive postures with these subordinate.
Exactly.
Okay, now tell me, when it comes to the actual fighting that occurs between these monkeys, how violent and vicious would it get?
It can get pretty vicious. So in the paper, we found that these subordinate males are actually actively engaging in the unit defense. So they're defending the unit. And in return, in for actively defending the unit, the subordinates get to sire some of the offspring in the unit. We have, when a male's tenure ends, that event is called a takeover event, where an unattached male, we call them the bachelors, similar to bachelors in humans, unattached. They'll come into the unit, challenge the leader male, the dominant male, for his females, and they'll go off in these really energetically costly chases with lots of loud display calls, and if it comes down to it, they'll fight, and they'll start attacking each other, and they have these large, you know, 4-inch canines that can rip apart each other, and occasionally the dominant male will die in these fights or be severely injured.
Did you actually see these fights, some of them to the death then?
We have seen these fights, you know, almost to the death. We can only speculate that it was to the death in the end, because we see a fight during a day where a dominant male is fighting with a bachelor, and the dominant male comes away with huge cuts all over his body, and the next day we don't see him.
But these are rare events you're talking about. What about the general defense of the female monkeys in the group? Is there a daily kind of interaction, daily fighting that occurs?
Yeah, so if the bachelors are hanging around the units, they'll be within, you know, half a kilometer. And at various points during the day, these dominant males and their follower males will go off and chase off the bachelors. So it typically does not come to physical aggressive contact, but most of the time they're still engaging in these energetically costly chasing off these bachelors. You know, we're at high altitude, so it's less oxygen up there, and they're chasing each other around, jumping up into trees. They're not very good climbers. They're actually terrestrial primates. And further, when they're away from their units, when they're off chasing the bachelors, there are chances for males from other units to mate with their females while they're not defending them.
When you watch these monkeys interact, was there anything about their behavior that made you think, wow, humans could actually learn something from this, or were they basically just a bunch of wild animals?
Well, a few things. I mean, I think we can learn a lot about the evolution of sort of human behavior, in that why we, you know, form close friendships with unrelated males, and that these males will often spend a lot of time grooming with one another and be very, you know, amiable towards one another over time. And even though they are competitors in terms of reproducing to the next generation, they are rather peaceable when they're actually interacting with one another. And even these bachelor males who don't have any females form really, really tight, strong bonds, showing that there are, you know, there are these really, really, you know, recognizable benefits to forming close social bonds, even with unrelated individuals, which we see, you know, in humans today.
Most of the time, then, you're seeing these monkeys relaxing, staying fairly calm together, but then occasional outbursts of screeching and yelling. Is that what happens?
Yeah, that tends to be what happens, and that definitely catches your eye. But, I mean, it's a lot of their there's a lot of vocal communication, a lot of contact communication in terms of grooming and females forming alliances. I mean, this paper only looked at one half of the equation. We looked at the males in the units.
Did the males defend? Now, were the males involved in defending the baby monkeys, or was that something they weren't really involved in?
So what we do see is sometimes when these dominant males are taken over and a new bachelor comes in, if they aren't killed, they can stick around in the unit and be sort of this grandfatherly figure in the unit. And we don't have enough data points on this, but we do have some anecdotal evidence where we see that these sort of grandfathers will carry around and groom with and often protect the offspring who were sired when they were the dominant male in the unit, so likely to be their offspring.
One last thing. Mm-hmm. What is it like to live in Ethiopia in the jungle? How long were you there, and what kind of amenities did you really have there?
So I was there for a total of 12 months. We're really high up, so, you know, contrary to what you might expect, oh, Africa's very hot. It actually gets quite chilly. It can reach below freezing some nights. We are up in the Simien Mountain National Park, as you mentioned, which is sort of a touristy site. We're at one of the first campsites, but we really have a hut with two solar panels, so enough power to charge laptops so we can collect data during the day. And other than that, no plumbing, no running water, and we have propane tanks for cooking. So we eat a lot of vegetables, and we carry our own water from the local spring.
So for 12 months, did you have any kind of email or cell phone access?
Every once in a while. Occasionally, we could use cell phones. And when we went to town to get our supplies every 1 or 2 weeks, the town that was about an hour and a half drive away. Other than that, we were restricted to using a satellite email apparatus which costs about $20 a megabyte. So we would just send one or two text emails a day to our advisors and maybe parents.
After 12 months, you had enough, or did you wish you could stay longer?
You know, it's a little bit of both. I really, really like being out there, but you do miss your family and friends back at home, of course. But it's just so unbelievably beautiful being out there and just being immersed in this natural environment and spending time and seeing all these cool new things that the monkeys are showing you. Even after 12 months, you know, on that 364th day, I still saw things that were totally new to me that I hadn't seen before, and it's just so cool. And having been back for over a year now, you know, I really do want to go back and spend some more time out there and see what's going on.
I wonder if you'd recognize those monkeys you knew.
Yeah.
Noah Snyder Mackler, he's a doctoral graduate of psychology at the University of Pennsylvania, the lead author of this study on gelada monkeys at the Simien Mountains National Park in Ethiopia. Noah, thanks for joining us on WYLS.
Thank you very much for having me.
We'll be right back to talk about Tom Cruise, Katie Holmes, their divorce, what happened and what you can learn from it if you're considering divorce. It's getting to be a complicated and interesting story there. We'll be right back to talk to a divorce attorney who knows a lot about this stuff. I'm Michael Cohen. You're listening to 1320 WILS.